Hello and welcome to episode 12 of XR Connections, a podcast about augmented reality, virtual reality, mixed reality, extended reality, XR. And in today's episode, we have an interview with Thomas Jackson. Thomas is the founder of Covalent, a design and development firm specializing in XR. He is an XR enthusiast and expert. And importantly for this episode, Thomas was a volunteer at this year's MIT Reality Hack, the XR Hackathon held at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts, this January 2020. The hackathon this year brought together over 350 hackers from over 40 countries who formed 80 teams, and starting on a Thursday, when everyone met one another and formed the teams, they worked all through the weekend, and I was able to attend the public demo, which was held on the Monday afternoon of January 20th. I had contacted the organizers prior to the event, really just to confirm that the public demo was the best time to see the projects. But when I got there, I met one of the organizers, Sarah Pillai, and she was fantastic, welcomed me and my friend, got us together with one of her colleagues, Maria Rice, who was also fantastic, very enthusiastic that we were there to attend the public demo, and Maria hooked us up with Thomas Jackson. Thomas flew up from Tallahassee, Florida, to volunteer at the event, and he graciously and enthusiastically walked my friend and I through the public demo of the MIT Reality Hackathon. This was really quite an incredible scene that is hard to describe. In the show notes, I have posted a link to a video that will give you some idea of what the scene was like. The event is held in your typical student union type building. All of the teams have set up on both sides of a public hallway to demo their projects for all of the visitors who are attending. It was crowded. It was exciting. It was really a thrilling event. So Thomas brought us through, and he had a game plan. He thought that it would be good to base our visit around the AR, VR, and MR hardware that was used. And that's what Thomas and I discuss in the interview that follows. We will be doing another episode that covers more of the projects, more of the people that we met, and insights from some of the participants. At this moment, you can check out the show notes for this episode, which has a link to the developer site for the hackathon, which has examples, descriptions of all the projects that we saw, including Ghostbust XR and Visible, which Thomas and I discuss in this interview. I'd like to thank Sarah, Maria, Ishwar, and Scott, who are all mentioned in the show notes. They are organizers of the hackathon, and they deserve congratulations for putting on such a tremendous event, and my thanks for their warm welcome. A note about the audio: this was recorded using the Anchor app, which is great in that you can record a phone conversation. It's okay in that sometimes you get some interference and the quality is not so hot. So there is some interference when I am speaking, but Thomas does most of the speaking. There are a few moments when you can't hear what Thomas is saying clearly, and in post I went in and clarified that. So apologies for the subpar quality in some of this interview. That is the audio quality, not the content. With that, our interview with Thomas Jackson and his thoughts on the AR and VR XR hardware and tech that he saw being used to great effect at this year's MIT Reality Hackathon. Hi, good morning, Thomas. How are you?
Doing wonderful, Liam. I appreciate having me on here today.
Oh, Thomas, I appreciate your time and so much gratitude for showing me and my friend around at the MIT Reality Hack. It was a wonderful experience, and I'm glad that we were able to connect and get back together and share some of what you saw at the MIT Reality Hack. Thomas, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with XR, AR, and VR in the first place, and then how you got involved with the MIT Reality Hack.
You got it. So to be quite honest, Liam, I've been a technology nut my whole life. And, you know, back from the days of Johnny Mnemonic and all the VR movies like Lawnmower Man, it was always kind of this hype dream that one day this was going to happen. To flash forward a little bit, 2012, 2011, around that time period, I was in a forum called Meant to Be Seen 3D. I think it's still lingering around the internet somewhere, but it was basically a bunch of just aficionados that loved 3D and VR, and just we loved anything around there. There was a lot of early military headsets that kind of got us, you know, excited, and then Sony came out with a few, but we all just really were passionate about the space, and we didn't know exactly, you know, what was going to happen. When I was there, Palmer Luckey, who would eventually later become the creator of the Oculus Rift, he was the most excited kid in the entire forum, posting the mm-hmm. most, the most interactive. And I, to be honest, I kind of loved his enthusiasm. And one day he posted that he was working on a project that he thought he had made a big breakthrough, and that he wanted our support. And sure enough, a few months later, we saw a Kickstarter pop up. Pretty much the entire Meant to Be Seen 3D community backed him. And when I got my first DK1 headset and put it on, I instantly fell in love with virtual reality. I knew then and there that this was going to change the world. And it's been a pretty amazing journey ever since then. It was just so exciting. And really from there, it's just been a, you know, constant figuring out the hardware. When is the right time to pounce? We've had a lot of ups and downs since then. The trough of disillusionment, if you will. And I've just remained very steady. I'm in this for the long haul. I really want virtual reality and spatial computing and XR to be the final thing I work on throughout my entire career. It's not something I look at as a small, you know, I'm jumping in this for a few years. It's no, this is what I want to work on for the rest of my life.
That's great. And you must have been inspired, as I was, by what we saw at the MIT Reality Hack. Was that not incredible?
It was literally a dream come true. I mean, I felt like everything I had been doing was leading up to Reality Hack. I actually helped foster the first hackathon here in my local area in Tallahassee, Florida, FSU, back in about 2013, 2014. And we did pretty good. You know, we did the best we could at FSU. We have, you know, pretty decent computer science school. But I definitely wanted a little more. So I started going to some other hackathons and things around the nation and experience. But MIT and what I just experienced just a few weeks ago was really the pinnacle. It really felt like we were at the epicenter of the future of spatial computing, XR, VR, AR. I could go on and on about it, but yeah.
I truly felt the same way. I felt like we were in a really special place and moment in time where we're seeing the future.
Exactly.
Seeing the future.
Brief recap about what the MIT Rally Hack is for everyone else. It's basically a five-day event held every January that comprises thought leaders, brand mentors, creators, participants, students, just technology lovers, you know, that come together and attend workshops, talks, discussions. We have fireside chats, you know, collaborations, and most importantly, hacking. Participants of, you know, various backgrounds and all skill levels attend from all over the world. I was so proud this year we had over 49 countries attend. I mean, a 49, yeah, 49 countries it's in. And, you know, like I said, it starts basically with workshops, and then we bring together teams. From there, you know, hacking takes place over 3 days. You know, they have access to mentors, some of the best hardware in the game, and snacks, of course, to guide the way. It all culminates to a judging and a public expo to bring, you know, basically to light some of the amazing projects and ideas developed. And boy, was there some amazing projects this year.
Amazing projects. And to be clear, what I attended was the public demo, which I think is the only time that is available to the public. And that's on the last day after the judging has gone through. And you're in a university building, and there are folding tables lining the hallway with all kinds of people from all over the world showing what they've just created over the last, what, three and a half days. Thomas, you were so kind to walk us through. I mentioned earlier the organizers who helped set that up in the introduction to this conversation. You had a great idea of how to go through it, and it was based on hardware first. So why don't you recreate that in a way, if you can, based on what you were seeing and what you got excited about in terms of the hardware and technology?
You got it. I mean, hardware has always been in my veins. And so to be at MIT with all this amazing hardware and get to see it all the way going back from the original Oculus Rift that was released back in, you know, 2016, and then kind of be side by side next to all of this other great stuff, it was really exciting. So I was really happy to get to do that. And you're right, I think that is the best way for us to start. So I guess we'll break it up into two different categories. We'll first start in the VR, and then we'll go into the AR. We'll start in VR, and that's, like I said, the original Oculus Rift. You know, it's an older generation. It came out in 2016, but like a lot of older hardware, the support and the SDKs have been well written for it. The documentation is really well done. So there's an ample library, and it's easiest to build for. So if you're a team coming into a hackathon, and you think, oh, I'm working on the Oculus Rift, and it's older, yeah, but at the same time, you have access to a plethora of things that have already been built for it. So it's like walking into a huge tool set and library that already is, you know, ready to go and established, versus some of the other hardware we're going to talk about is literally, quite literally, on the bleeding edge. And you're sometimes having to write the SDK yourself. So the Oculus Rift, like you said, traditional headset, you have to have the sensors. I think that's the biggest downside to it, is you have to have these sensors set up just right. If you move those, you lose tracking and things like that. The Oculus Quest is right now by far, I think, the most popular consumer VR headset in the world. It's selling out. I think I just checked the other day. It's sold out all the way until March right now. And I think they just marked it as out of stock because they're working on trying to figure out a way to create more of these things. John Carmack is my hero, and he put blood, sweat, and tears into the technology that went into the Quest. It's quite magical that on a mobile phone processor, this thing can both handle the battery life that's needed to create, you know, a two-hour type of experience, but you can also have the full 6 degree of freedom tracking that we're used to from VR. That was a huge point that was holding back VR in general. You know, back however long ago when New York Times had, you know, given out everybody free Google Cardboards, Google Cardboard and putting a phone in a cardboard case is not anywhere near what the Quest gives you. True 6 degree of freedom tracking, where you have controllers, you have your hands, you have the ability to move around in space. That to me is VR. Viewing and peering through a piece of cardboard is not VR. It was a great idea and a great way to make it accessible to the public. However, I truly don't believe it was, you know, the right step at the time, because sometimes you only get one first impression. And a lot of people I think that I talk to still have the impression of VR as being a cardboard box. And that to me is funny. So the Quest is just a really great headset. And for $400, I think it's pound for pound probably the best piece of technology you can buy in the world right now. Moving on, we got the Vive Pro. Really excited about Vive. And, they've always been really hungry in the past. And I talked to some people at the MIT Reality Hack that are from Vive, and competitor that just won't give up. And to be quite honest, we wouldn't have the VR industry that we have without them. They kept Oculus on their toes throughout the years. And, you know, it's just good for the market to have competition. So their latest version, the Vive Pro, ups the ante by having higher resolution, pretty darn good sound. And it's really just a complete VR solution that works quite well. HP Reverb is very similar to the Vive Pro in that, you know, it's more of a traditional headset. It requires a tethered wire, which is one of the restrictions of the PC side. Whereas the Quest is kind of magical because, you know, for the first time, you really don't need a wire connected to the headset that allows kind of true freedom. The Vive Pro, the HP Reverb, they offer higher resolution graphics, much, you know, just a higher fidelity experience, if you will. But that comes at a cost of having to be plugged directly into a computer, which then limits it, you know, in certain ways. Now, what we...
Here, Thomas is introducing the Vario VR headset, what he calls a peek at the future of VR, a $10,000 headset used, as you might expect, for very high-end applications.
Once again, it's one of those things that's on the bleeding edge, so if you decide to go work in it, there's chances are, you know, you're going to have a very limited SDK set, and whenever you try to go outside of the bounds of that, you're going to end up writing your own code. But... me and you put that on, and I thought it was the most mind-blowing thing to be able to see the world through a digital display almost as clear as you would expect it to be. And we call that the human bionic display, and it's got an amazing resolution, 3,000 PPI. Basically, its idea is it brings high visual fidelity to even the most demanding industrial scenarios, you know, where extreme precision and photorealistic accuracy is required. But so exciting because it really is a peak and shows you the idea that this is coming right around the corner. I mean, if you have this headset now, I would say the technology that's in it is only 2 to 3 years away from coming down in price and being affordable enough to be in an everyday type of headset.
I'm so glad we got to see that. That was a stunning display.
Yeah.
Stunning.
Yeah. Just seeing you in there and watching your reaction to it. And it's making me giddy because it's really one of those transformative experiences where once you see it, you kind of can't unsee it. Yeah. So I think that's a good overview of the VR, and we'll jump into the augmented reality. So we have the Magic Leap 1, which, man, these guys have been going through it, especially down by me, you know, down in Florida. And I think they're working out of like the Orlando or near their area. And they've kind of been this, you know, stealth startup, billions of dollars being poured into this place. They got their first headset out, the Magic Leap 1, I believe, almost a year or so ago. And they've been steadily working, trying to build and develop their creator network around that. It's a great headset. A puck on your belt, kind of, if you will, or in your pocket, and it runs a wire up to the headset to offload the processing from the headset itself, so that makes the headset lighter. But it's a great stab at augmented reality. The ergonomics are great. The design, I think, is wonderful. The limitations, I think, right now are just the field of view needs to be all-encompassing. And I know that's one of the hardest things about AR right now is getting the field of view to the point where it's close to our vision. I mean, that's what we want. Magic Leap was truly one of the first out there in the game, and I am very much excited to see what their second iteration will be. Of course, Microsoft was a main sponsor at the event, so they came with it pretty hard, and I'm really excited about what they're doing. So they got the HoloLens 1, which was there, almost 3 years ago or something, for about $3,000. Really, Microsoft specifically aimed that towards the commercial market for commercial applications. So think, you know, you're in a car assembly line and the worker wants to, you know, just pull out and visually inspect the part and get detail and information about it. That's really what the HoloLens was geared for right out of the gate. I did not expect them to follow up with the HoloLens 2 so quickly, but we've seen a lot of improvements there from both the processing power, the field of view, just a whole gambit going there, which is just really exciting. So just a great headset all around, and there's definitely one to watch. However, very once you get said expensive. I'm not sure off the top of my head the price of the HoloLens 2, but I want to say it's right up there around the same area as the last one, like $3,000. It's still in that commercial realm, if you will. This next one I'm really excited
about. This is the North Star project.
I hadn't wasn't exactly on my radar until I went to the MIT event and got to see it in person. But apparently, a developer that was at Magic Leap decided to kind of have a spinoff project to see if he could create some of the technology that they were working on, but in a much cheaper fashion, more of a consumer do-it-yourself type of version. And sure enough, it's basically a 3D printed version of the Magic Leap. I think the kit that you can buy at Project North Star is about $300, and you can kind of put it together yourself. Now, it is big, and it is bulky, and it is, you know, wild looking. I mean, whereas other headsets, you know, you can obviously tell they're trying to make it look streamlined and kind of beautiful and sexy. This is not that. This is this, you know, kludgy, huge thing over your face. However, from what I've been able to see from it, it's got some of the best field of view out there because it's got these huge lenses on both the left and right eye that you can kind of peer off into the, that's a huge problem now, is that when you look over to your peripheral vision, you kind of completely lose the ability to see things in AR. This Project North Star is working to attack that. And that's really exciting. And most importantly, I think what people don't understand about this area is that the content is king. And so if you make the hardware so expensive or too hard to access, then what you're really doing is limiting the content that can be created, because it's really these beautiful minds that we just got to saw up at MIT that are going to be coming up with all the really cool projects that make these things pop. You know, when the iPhone first released, they didn't even have an app store. Okay. It wasn't until the app store with the iPhone 3G came out, and then creators started coming up with apps, that it really transformed that phone into what we know it is today. And we need to go through that moment with all of these headsets. And I think we're finally starting to get there. The In Real Light, last but not least, I was really excited about, hung out with these guys a lot, a group out of China. And the thing I'm most excited about this is that, once again, leading onto the consumer side of this, They're billing it as the first consumer ready AR headset. And what that means is basically, well, it's cheap. It's only going to be $500. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, it's lightweight. And if you look at some pictures of it, I got to try it on myself. It's lightweight. And to be honest, you almost can't tell it's an AR headset just by looking. It just looks kind of like a bulky pair of sports glasses, like a pair of Oakleys. And I think that's definitely a lot closer where we need to be to get mainstream adoption. And I'm really excited that we're only about 5 months away from them releasing this to the world for $500. And the other beauty about it is that you only need your phone to plug into it. So it doesn't require that puck to put in your pocket or any extra processing unit. You're literally just a fairly high-end phone of the last 2-3 years. I forget, I think it's like a Snapdragon 855 or something or above. And you can take advantage of this headset. So I'm really excited about that. I think that wraps up most of the hardware that we saw.
I agree. And Thomas, the Nreal, the team that had built their project for Nreal, that table was full with people. The entire 3 hours that I was there, I didn't even get a chance to try it because they were always on someone.
You got it. Because they had applications ready to go. They're lightweight. They had multiple units out ready to go. It was exciting to see where that world's going to go.
So that kind of leads us to some of the projects, and we have to say there's no way we could cover all of the great projects, and I will be doing follow-ups with a number of people from the MIT hack, because you introduced me to a number of the developers and the organizers. But let's talk about some of the projects that you were really excited about.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I could go on forever. 459 participants, and I think almost over 100 teams. And some of these people were literally already professionals in the game that had left, you know, taken off, you know, a week of work so that they could be there. And I just was so proud. But one that really stood out to me was Ghostbuster VR game that we created, not on the franchise, but just a easy to play kind of find the ghost in a room game. It wasn't about the game itself that was the hard part of what they were trying to do. This team was trying to bridge the gap, okay, between AR, VR, and every other device that you could imagine. So they in 36 hours were able to build a game that can potentially cross play with 8 different types of devices. This is huge because what this means is somebody that holds their phone up can, using augmented reality, see the environment and world in which someone that's in VR is playing in, and they can interact with that person at the same time. So this allows the ability to play a game where someone is outside of VR and they can interact and play with someone in VR. Everyone thinks of VR as being this tremendously isolating experience. Well, first of all, there's this thing called multiplayer and you can join other people in places. But beyond that, I mean, just in the room you're in, when you put it on, you tend to feel isolated. Well, this changes that because now the person outside will be able to feel like they are very much a participant in the game with the other person. I mean, I was so proud of him because the challenge of this was phenomenal. You're talking about breakthrough multiplayer networking. All of these devices have completely different SDKs. So to build a system in which can harness all of them and then get the latency down and get the ability to have, I think they said they did a test where they got up to 37 concurrent users at once. I mean, it was just mind-blowing. I can't believe they got it together in 36 hours.
An incredible challenge to pose themselves and an incredible result.
You got it. You got it. And the next one, I hate to say it, a little biased, but I mean, it really was impressive to me. One of my best friends, Ryan Kapinski, that I came up here with from Tallahassee to the event, him and his team actually placed top 10. And I think they won second in AR for Visible. So Visible is basically an AR tracking app to let you know who is around you. So imagine you go to an event, a conference, and everybody's there and everybody has name tags. Great. But what if you could just hold up your phone and see, oh, that's Bill. Bill works here or does this. And you can kind of track around the room what everybody's doing. What I loved about what Ryan told me about this is when you build an application, it's really beautiful when you start at a pain point that is very much real to you. And This problem was very real to them. When they got to the event, they had a really hard time of, okay, there's 459 amazing people here. It seems as if, you know, anybody I choose would be good. However, how do I do that in a very finite amount of time in this amazing space that's huge? And this is what they set out to build. They go, we're going to build an AR app that's basically going to do real-time face detection from everybody around you. So it's actually, you know, looking at faces and going, oh, that is this person. And then right over their head, you can see a little symbol, if you will, that you could basically add information to. And if you wanted to find out more, you could just click that little symbol while holding it up and looking at the person. And it would give you an exact, you know, oh, that's a developer. That's an artist. That's a 3D modeler. And we're really hoping, if all goes well, that next year we're going to try and institute Visible for the event for us to use for all the participants. So I was so proud of them that they were able to pull that off. And like I said, I could go on and on about all the different projects, but those were two that really stood out to me. And I think a great way to wrap it up.
Thank you, Thomas. I love that the event and the challenge of the event itself led to one of the projects that was done there.
You got it. Great. You got it. We're gonna have to do some more of this though, Liam, because I'm telling you, there's a lot more to cover.
I know there is, and I think we're just gonna have to agree right now that we're gonna follow up on this. Thomas, tell us a little bit about who you follow and who we should follow in the XR world.
Wow, man, the list goes on and on. So I would say, you know, of course, John Carmack. I mean, he was the legend behind the Quest. However, he just stepped aside to do AI. Michael Abrash is quite literally my hero. Started off at, I think he was at Valve and Steam for years, and they lured him away over to Oculus because they, you know, they told him, hey, we're going to build the future. And he is quite literally a genius and is underpinning a lot of the amazing technologies that are coming out of there. He's at Facebook Reality Labs. I love Timmy. I don't have his last name. He was at the event. He works for Volvo.
This is Timmy Giarau, and we do have his info last name, in the show notes.
If we can put that in the show notes. Yeah, he's leading the Volvo AR effort over there. And he is doing some really amazing stuff with applied research of where VR is going and how it's going to kind of, you know, push into the car market and things like that. So some really cool stuff going over there. The list goes, I mean, on and on. I'll have to put together a list and see if we can't push that out somewhere.
We'll add some in the show notes. And Thomas, I thank you for your time. I know you have a client waiting. So, but before you go, tell us a little bit about Covalent and what you're going to, what you're doing and how people can get in touch with you.
You got it. So, you know, Covalent's my dream child company. You know, back, like I said, when I was trying to, I had been a graphic web developer for many years and loved that industry and loved design, but fell in love with 3D printing and fell in love with VR way back in 2010, 2012. And I started thinking about how would I build a company to harness all of these different technologies. I wanted a company that would allow me to kind of, you know, research and develop these different technologies, because I had a feeling that they weren't just going to happen overnight. It was going to take many years of going down the road on it. So Covalent has really been my, you know, my vehicle to getting through all of this magic that we're starting to see. And it's really starting to finally take off here down in Tallahassee. Tallahassee is my home community. You know, I know it seems out of the way down here in little old Florida, but to be honest, it's made me, the challenge of not having everything around me has made me seek it out. I go to LA, I go to MIT, I go to these places where it's happening and it inspires me, and I come back here and I work like crazy. So you can follow us. It's just gocovalent.com. We're on social, on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Go Covalent. You can learn all about some of the stuff we've been doing. And well, hopefully I'll get to follow up and kind of give you a whole background on another show about, you know, how a little bit more about us.
Would love to do that. Thomas, again, thank you for your time for this interview. And again, thank you for showing us around the MIT Reality Hack. It was a fantastic event. I think everyone listening can pick up on your knowledge and your enthusiasm in this world. Thank you, Thomas. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Liam. This was wonderful. I really appreciate it. Can't wait to do it again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And one more time, a thank you to Thomas Jackson for that great interview. I think you can really hear the enthusiasm and love for XR that he brings to this. And he deserves congratulations as well for putting in all that time volunteering for this MIT hackathon. Thank you again to the organizers for such a warm welcome. I am the host of XR Connections, Liam O'Malley. Reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find the show notes at marsandmercury.com. That's Mars and Mercury, like the planets or the deities, if you will. We use Anchor to publish the podcast, and Anchor to publish the podcast is fantastic. We used Anchor to record the interview, which is okay. We use Logic Pro 10X to record the podcast, and the music is by Dr. Mars. Thank you for listening.